A Hero's Journey is a podcast filled with spoilers. We recommend reading the book each week before you listen, but we trust you to make your own decision.
Hi, and welcome to A Hero's Journey, a literary podcast. I'm your host and judge, Jack, and I am here with my neglected nephews.
This is Alex.
And I'm Zach.
Each week, we look at a different book through Joseph Campbell's monomyth.
This week, we are discussing The Magician's Nephew, the sixth book in the Chronicles of Narnia series, or the first book, depending on when you bought this series and when you read it. This book follows Diggory and Polly, two children living in London, and this book is set well before our other books in the Narnia series. The adventure begins when Diggory's uncle Andrew sends Polly to another world and sends Diggory to chase after her. They end up in a place between places, in the wood between worlds, and first travel to a world, Charn, a dead world, where they find a witch, Jadis, and awake her and bring her back to London. They then try and return the witch to her home world of Charn, but accidentally go to a new world, which they will soon find out is Narnia. They see Aslan create this world, and Diggory asks Aslan for a gift to heal his mother, and is sent on a quest to find a specific apple. Doing so, Diggory plants a tree that will protect Narnia, and then also is able to take an apple to his mother and heal her of her illness.
And let us for once not begin a Narnia book where they all begin, which would normally be being sucked into Narnia, and instead begin with a meeting with Uncle Andrew.
Yes. So our adventure this week is focusing on Diggory, and it's to have an adventure and rescue his mother, basically heal his mother, do something for her. At the beginning, he feels helpless to do anything about her illness, and part of the journey is figuring out how he can help her. For our call to adventure, both Polly and Diggory meet Uncle Andrew, and he explains that he has found a way to travel to another world, and he is going to be making them do this for him. For a refusal of the call, after Polly and Diggory travel to the wood between the worlds, they get some memory loss. They can't remember what's going on because it seems like the place between the worlds is sweet and just makes them kind of forget the issues and realities of home now that they're there. For a meeting of the mentor, I guess we have Uncle Andrew. He provides some information about how the rings work, and some information about how Diggory is going to be traveling to a different place. And he's, for me, the best example I could find in the book at this stage. For crossing the threshold, I think this is Diggory and Polly going to the other world, saying, hey, we're not going to come right back to Earth. Let's go somewhere else. Let's explore a little bit. And for a belly of the whale, this is once they are in Charn, striking the bell with the spell written on it that wakes up Queen Jadis.
I'm rereading the summary here, Alex, and I do love that Uncle Andrew tricks Polly into touching a yellow magic ring, causing her to vanish. He then blackmails Diggory into taking another yellow ring to follow Polly.
Okay, you're ruining all my blackmailing points.
Well, you You will get those points. I it's just been, I guess, 2 months since I read this, so I forgot that he just straight up blackmails them.
Yeah.
All right. So I think the adventure to rescue his mother is a fine one because the end justifies the means. But if we weren't really using that, it's definitely kind of on the back burner. And besides what I assume you'll use later as a temptation, it doesn't fare too heavily in like their day-to-day activities of this story. But since it's what ultimately happens, it's hard in a prequel novel to, you know, I thought it was going to be something along the lines of like the creation of ancient Narnia or something, but then maybe we're talking too far into Aslan. So like I said, I'm good with it. The call to adventure, I think, is fine because their meeting with Uncle Andrew is what sets the events into place. But when they're like stuck in the, I feel like you can't have your refusal of the call and the crossing of the threshold simultaneously here, because
the refusal of the call happens immediately when they're sent into the world, the wood between worlds. They don't remember what's going on, right? And then they take some time, they start talking to each other and realize, oh yeah, wait, we're Polly and Diggory and we live in London and we're children and Uncle Andrew sent us here. They're like, whoa, I guess we should go back. And then they decide not to go back. They go to a different pool and go to Charn.
I just wanted to clarify for our readers that they weren't the kind of, there was progression in between the two events, because in our synopsis they seemed a little stunted. In which case, refusal of the call is fine, I suppose. They're not actively trying to do it, but we've accepted ones where they're not actively trying to do it before. For the meeting the mentor, very much just like Uncle Andrew, he's there for an extremely brief period of time. He has proven to be fairly bad at what he does as a magician, quote unquote. And he also like straight up causes all this in a negative way, right? He tricks Polly and then pretty much needs to cajole Diggory into going back and getting her, even though he's the adult and he should be the one who does it.
Yes, but he is
much Joel's too, a nice word.
He's much too important to be wasted on simple tasks like traveling between worlds for the first time. He can't do that himself. He needs his little apprentice and nephew, his beloved apprentice and nephew Diggory, to do that for him.
Yeah, better Diggory get killed.
Exactly.
What's with our books and Diggory's ending up dead?
Who's to say?
Yeah, look, Uncle Andrew's just not a good mentor.
He's not a good dude. Uncle Andrew sucks.
He straight up like folds to the queen when she shows up.
Yeah, no, Uncle Andrew is not getting into Aslan's country.
For our crossing the threshold, I don't inherently have a problem with them jumping into the pool and world, but I see it more as also being kind of a belly of the whale as opposed to the waking up of Queen Jadis. What is it that they can't go back from there that they couldn't already go back from earlier?
Well, for me, it's now that they've started to travel and started to think about, well, can we bring things back? It should spark a Diggory this thought of maybe I can find something to heal
my mom. It should. You're right.
All right. Well, let's think back to our call to adventure when Uncle Andrew is threatening Diggory and essentially like blackmailing him into going into the wood between worlds. Part of what he's talking about is like, I'm going to tell your mother and the shock will kill her. Like he's reminding him right then of the danger to his mother and his mother's illness. And then immediately Diggory goes between places and then he travels to a different world. And he is looking around, looking for stuff to take back or things that might be useful or interesting. I think.
Are you just, are these assumptions, or we get a line where he goes, "Ooh, this would look nice in my bedroom."
Assumptions.
Okay, that's what I thought.
But I mean, look, we're literally crossing into a new world.
I don't inherently mind it as a crossing of the threshold. I just think that it's also your belly of the whale, and therefore the belly of the whale that you've chosen with the striking of the bell is.
Oh, you know, okay. Well, then let me argue that when they strike the bell and wake up Queen Jadis, this really is a reminder of the specific call they have. And now they have specific knowledge that there are people who can do magic and there are people who can do extraordinary things. Queen Jadis isn't the one who's going to be able to help them in the end, right? Like, she is the evil queen. She becomes the White Witch, but she does do and say that she's done incredible things, like keep herself alive for millennia when everything else around her is dead. And now that they've struck the bell, they've woken the queen up, and this is what causes them eventually to go into Narnia to meet Aslan and to have the end of our adventure, the most important part of our adventure. If they hadn't woken up Queen Jadis, they wouldn't necessarily have gone back to the Wood Between Worlds and then into Narnia.
It's just odd for me to have a situation in which our belly of the whale that we can't return from, which leads directly to a returning of the main characters to where they started from.
But the world has changed when they come back because of Jadis.
A changed seems like a grand word, because as soon as they leave again, everyone forgets about it.
I'm torn between waking her up, striking the bell. It does have a very definitive moment to it, but it is accidentally bringing her back to Earth that kind of sets the rest of us in motion. And we're in murky territory anyway with this departure, because it is all the necessary departure. He just doesn't know that he's actually on the quest to heal his mother yet.
Yeah, it's not until we get introduced into the apple that we actually...
Yeah, he realizes that that's what this has all been about. But we know. And we know that the hero's journey allows our hero to be on an adventure without knowing it yet. Yeah, it's not perfect, but it... A separation from the known definitely comes somewhere between striking the bell and the bulk of the adventure on Earth. So I'm going to give it to Alex. That is going to bring us to a close on our departure with just that mentor missing, which I feel is relatively classic for Narnia. Sometimes there's mentors, sometimes there's not. I guess Narnia isn't together yet, so there's no animal guide to come help them, and Uncle Andrew sucks.
So for our Road of Trials here, the first step is fleeing from Charn to Earth, and then from Earth going into Narnia. This shows Diggory that, you know, the stuff that he's finding between the worlds isn't benevolent. There is, you know, danger and struggles that he's going to be facing now that he's gone between the worlds. But there's also a lot of power there. And taking Jadis back to Narnia is a struggle for him. It's not something that he does easily. He has to, work to get it. Work to get her to the Wood Between Worlds and then to Narnia. For the Road of Trials, this is, for me, the founding of Narnia when they see Aslan. The trial here is to not be afraid and not run away like Jadis. They have to realize that Aslan, although powerful and terrible, is not a danger to them. And Diggory does this quite well. And then the third task on the Road of Trials is the quest for the apple. Actually now going and getting the thing that is going to save his mother, even though even at that time when Diggory leaves on the quest for the apple, he doesn't know that that's what the quest is for. For our meeting with the higher power, I'm going to look to two people, the cabbie and Strawberry. The cabbie eventually becoming the king of Narnia, and Strawberry eventually becoming the first Pegasus, which probably can't call him Pegasus if Strawberry is the first one.
Yeah, flying horse.
Okay, whatever.
Strawberry, yes.
So the gift and the gift that they give to Diggory is the ability to travel, essentially. The cabbie is the one who initially talked Strawberry into taking Diggory on his back to Aslan, and then Strawberry, as the first flying horse, takes Diggory to where the apple is located. For the Temptress, this is essentially to take the apple for himself, to not listen to the advice of other people like Polly or Aslan, and to take the apple himself, listening again to Jadis when she says that Aslan's trying to hide this from you, and it's something that you can have and have power from. And just reminding us of the bell, where Polly's telling him, you know, don't touch the bell, don't strike the bell, but it's Jadis through the little rhyme that convinces him to do it. For our atonement with the creator, this is after Diggory returns with the apple and Aslan tells him to throw it, and he does. And Aslan says, well done, that was a good toss. Showing that Diggory has done well, not only in the quest, like the toss, but in getting the apple and resisting that temptation. For the apotheosis, this is the realization that taking an apple for yourself is harmful to you, it hurts you, but taking it for others is helpful. It provides the required aid. And for our ultimate boon, this is Aslan telling him to take an apple from the tree that he has made to his mother to heal her.
All right, so your road to trial is utterly unconvincing, in my opinion. We flee from Charn and go to Narnia. That's a several-step journey there that I think that kind of blows over the actions that happen in the contemporary story of London.
Well, that's part of it. Like, that's a whole time from Charn to Narnia. I understand what you're saying, but keep going. Sorry.
That's okay. And pretty much in the entirety of it, the only thing that they do of active is to bring the group back to the wood between worlds. The actual discovery of Narnia and the moving into that world is the horse's fault, Strawberry's. And it's all essentially random. All of this stuff that they've been doing up to this point, you know, the original finding of Charn, the selection of the brand new burgeoning world. So it doesn't seem like they're actively doing anything in this point besides the one return moment with that has the, you know, the passerbys brought in, the handsome cab driver, etc. For the founding of Narnia, the trial was to not be afraid. I don't know. They're definitely still afraid, and they should be, because if they're not, they're stupid. And Aslan does all the heavy lifting in this trial. He makes the world from scratch. And then the quest for the apple is a fine trial. Even if it is one that's like rather prolonged, but it's the first thing that they actually kind of have to do and are assigned to do and actually complete. So that one's fine, but the other two I don't like.
So I want to argue the founding of Narnia one first, because the trial isn't like the founding of Narnia. It's at the founding of Narnia, and this is where the highly allegorical nature of the book has to come into play, so you can realize what's going on. God, or Aslan, is essentially coming down, and he is terrible and powerful. Terrible in the sense that he's so powerful it should strike terror into you. But the trial is to not be afraid of it, to realize that God or Aslan loves you, wants you to be happy, right? It's in the face of this amazing, powerful creature, to not be afraid of it, to accept that it wants you to be happy and that you should listen to it. You should, you know, obey it.
Yeah, I don't love it, but he is right about that. Right? They aren't actively doing anything, but on the grounds of being good Jesus lion fearing people, they don't
hit him with a lamppost. Therefore, yeah, they qualify.
They're attracted to Aslan singing while Jadis is afraid, right?
And Uncle Andrew too. He is afraid.
He's afraid. Yeah. So they pass the trial of moral character.
Yeah. The be not afraid from the Bible. Thank you, 12 years of Catholic education.
Be not afraid, said the thing with many eyes that it was terrifying.
Yes. And then for the first trial here, I understand that it's accidental, but when they are in it's not all of it is accidental. They intentionally flee from Charn. They accidentally
which causes a problem.
Jadis with them. Yes. They intentionally go home and again accidentally bring Jadis.
So that's the same thing. So don't try to cop those as two things.
Okay. But then intentionally, Diggory intentionally realizes that he's created an issue.
Intentionally and realizes. Okay, we have to pick our words more carefully.
No, we don't.
You don't intentionally realize anything.
All right. So he realizes that he's caused an issue, and then he intentionally goes with the goal of taking her back to the Woods Between Worlds, and then Charn, he just accidentally ends up in Narnia instead. Like, he does complete the task of realizing that Jadis is a problem and getting her out of his freaking earth.
Yeah, so suck it.
No. On many issues, but Jack seems to be fine with it, so we'll move on. Jack chooses the path of least resistance due to his fatigue.
You can't prove shit. I am a discerning judge and will hear no comments otherwise, else you will be made afraid.
All right, for our meeting with the higher power, it's not until like essentially the end of the story that the cabbie and has any real power, and all that's granted to him by Aslan is to be the progenitor of the kings of Arkenland. And Strawberry, who becomes a Pegasus, is given that by Aslan. So really what you're saying here is the higher power is Aslan.
No, God gives gifts to people, and then those people use those gifts to help Diggory. Look, I understand the cabbie. The part about the cabbie is just that initial, like, talking to Strawberry and convincing him to give Diggory a ride, but Strawberry here, I think, does a lot of the heavy lifting as the higher power. He freely elects to help Diggory, to take Diggory, and then Aslan gives him the gift of flight to take Diggory to the apples faster.
Huh. I mean, yeah, he does certainly aid, but I feel like they have such... It feels very rushed, if you know what I mean. Like, you know, a higher power. Okay, I'm given this great power, and then I did something with it because somebody told me I should. It didn't seem intentional is not the right word, but you know, whenever we see these higher powers, it seems thought out and predetermined and stuff. And this is just you guys need a way to get something, so the magic lion made it happen. And how convenient that the thing said that it would do it, even though it could. Beforehand, it was just a normal ass horse.
Look, the magic lion does a lot of things, Zach. I don't understand. The one bit that I do need a little convincing on is what do you think makes Strawberry not just a late party member?
Hmm. Huh. That's That's tough because it's not like a specific thing. It's just a feeling. Like the party is Diggory and Polly to me, just those two. I guess because Strawberry doesn't start the adventure with them, right? He doesn't finish the adventure with them. He's just there for this part.
I'll give you, he's not at the beginning or
end. He is at the end.
Well, but he doesn't come back to Earth and like live with them or something. He stays in Narnia. I'll give it to you on that.
Huzzah!
All right.
I don't think we need to talk about the temptation.
The atonement with the creator. The temptation is fine. It's the literal apple, so cool. The atonement with the creator. It seems like a fairly kind of bland atonement, right? Because if we go back to our description, yes, we understand that Aslan created everything and yada yada.
The Emperor across the sea created everything.
Yeah, fine. And this is
except for maybe
Taff. This is just his pet lion.
This book doesn't mention the Emperor across the sea for whatever reason.
What's also weird about this book is that Aslan critiques the witch for not being there when the rules of the world were written, but she literally was. So,
well, no, it's the even deeper magic. She was only there for the deep magic.
This is the extra even, deep magic.
The extra deep magic was the deep was 2.0. Before they showed up.
Okay.
Do not quote the deep
magic. For the atonement with the creator, again, it seems like he doesn't really like confront it in an ultimate way, right?
It's so easy to just nod along and say, yeah, you know, it's the Jesus metaphor, but I'm not. What makes this an atonement rather than just the returning to the king having completed the quest?
There is the understanding between Diggory and Aslan that he struck the bell because he wanted to. That was the start of this, bringing Jadis into Narnia, bringing the evil into Narnia. And now Diggory has completed the quest to save Narnia. For a time, the tree provides protection from the witch, from the evil that he has brought in there. And Diggory has resisted this temptation. So Aslan here is recognizing you have atoned for the sin of bringing the original evil into the world.
Yeah,
and you resisted the temptation. God, I love allegory. It's so much easier to argue when there's literal.
It's fine. At least Frank's just King Frank. High King Peter still gets to rule.
All right, so for our apotheosis, there's no real realization. There is an explanation to the main character about how something works, but there is no intrinsic work that Diggory does in this instance to actually decide for himself. It's just...
I 100% agree with you on principle, Zach. I believe we've accepted it in the past. So unless we want to make a new motion going forwards, then you're not just allowed to be told the apotheosis. But I think that's
going to... I move to make that motion in this instance.
No, see, we don't change them for just these instances. That means that going forward, we have to obey it. And I'm going to guess that there's going to be a lot of times where that big shocking reveal is still going to be like a villain monologue. I am your father. Luke didn't have to work for that. Still definitely an apotheosis.
Ew. All right. The ultimate boon is fine. Even though we get all sort of like a whole bunch of other stuff happens, that's the ultimate boon. It's just not necessary for Diggory. So I guess it's fine.
Stupid goddamn Alex got all the points because allegory is easy. Well done, C.S. Lewis, on your perfect initiation.
I like to think that I argued very well for these points.
I'm gonna write like an allegorical poem that's only like 15 words, and we're gonna do it on the show, and it'll meet all the requirements because everything will have to be some context.
I don't know if this is really sub-context as much as
just make sure just the context. Just make sure you split the... Yeah, this one's not... I want to say that Magician's Nephew in the last battle really, really strip away any of the facade that we're not just talking about Christianity. Sitting, waiting, wishing for the Jesus line to come back. We come to the return.
I was sitting, waiting, wishing you believed in superstition.
Maybe then you'd see the lion signs.
All right. So exactly like Jack said, our refusal is Diggory and Polly and Uncle Andrew sitting in the wood between worlds. And for a short, brief moment, there is a temptation for them to go into another world, but they have the warning from Aslan to only use the rings to return home and then never use them again. So that is ultimately what they decide to do. For our magical flight, this is the travel back to London. And this is where the time jump happens. They come back and no time has passed at all. Everyone is still standing there. Confused about what happened to the cabbie and why the cabbie disappeared and this terrible witch person. For our rescue from without, there's a maid holding a door open, just standing right there, just perfect for Diggory and Polly to run through the crowd and escape into the open door. For crossing a return threshold, sharing the knowledge of the journey with his mother, Diggory gives her the apple, and that ultimately heals her. For our master of two worlds, Diggory is accepted by Aslan and happy at home with his mother. And for freedom to live, this one is explicitly stated. It says, quote, they were going to live happily ever after.
They were going to. Until it was too late.
Until the last battle, but we're not there yet. And they still live happily ever after. So I'm going to count it. As my own judging myself, I've decided that that's a good point.
I don't know if the refusal of your return is really a refusal, right? Because they go immediately to do the thing. It's just they're kind of required to wait on the godlike being that's done everything for them and get issued this warning, or else we don't get the Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. Like, this has to exist in order to set up what eventually becomes the wardrobe. So there's that. The magic flight is a jump between worlds. Well, sorry, I'm not going to move on to your debate.
I'm not going to debate that point. That was a weak point.
All right, fine. The magic flight I'm actually fine with because it's a jumping between worlds. It just meets the bare minimum. Cool, good job. The rescue from without, the convenient maid, I'm pretty sure even though they're children, they can figure out how to open a door.
But opening the door would have brought attention to them, and then maybe they could have been questioned by the crowd about what happened. Well, since the maid was already holding it open there.
Oh no, we're children. We don't know what happened next.
Yeah. Hey,
mommy.
Sorry, bud.
For the crossing of the return threshold, he does share the apple with his mother, which is like the ultimate boon of the journey. So I'm actually completely fine with that one. I think that's muy, muy bueno. But the master of the two worlds, again, it's not going to matter until the last battle. And sure, he's happy. We don't know he's happy at home. We just know that his father is home and his mother survives. Maybe his father beats him and his mother develops a gambling addiction.
Actually, we do know, because we have knowledge of the previous books. We know that he is the professor and he is happy.
He goes out of his way to make a bunch of other children miserable. How come his children get to be high king? Like family gets to be High King Peter and he is stuck not being king of anything.
Well, because he brought the original evil into the world.
So also because there is only one
true king of Narnia, and it is High King Peter.
Is the original evil the queen?
Yes.
But she gets defeated in book two, so why is he still being punished? Or book one? Yeah, but
you don't get one. To you get to atone for your sins, but you don't get them full wiped away.
All right, I don't think he's the master of two worlds. He's happy at home. Being accepted by Aslan is a bare minimum.
He is not. Yeah, he's not a master of Narnia. Not in the way that our other characters.
No, he gets explicitly sent home and told, "Don't come back." Yakety yak. Diggery diggery. And then finally, for our freedom to live, they were going to live happily ever after. That sounds very something happened, and that's not the case.
Yeah, but unfortunately, well, you and I can argue semantics forever. He does live happily ever after.
Roger, Dodger.
Liggery
diggery.
Liggery diggery. Liggery diggery dock. The mouse went up the clock, and the return ended. With just that rescue from without and Master of Two Worlds missing, leaving us with a very Narnia-esque 14 out of 17 final points. Unsurprisingly, Polly and Diggory went on a hero's journey and learned about Jesus, even though they didn't know it yet. Coming in on our closing thoughts, I don't have as many. It's a Narnia book. It was fun when I read it. This one's not really up there on my end. Not gonna lie, actually, the more I reread Narnia as an adult, the more I get annoyed at Lewis for like doing only 75% of the work for real world building. Narnia and the greater Narnia universe just have so many annoying holes that bother me these days, and this book is definitely
those holes are how people get in. Is this hole is how people get into Narnia? That's what the hole is.
How I get into you. Oh,
we don't need to talk about that on the podcast.
But yeah, it's Narnia. It's fun. We went on an adventure.
Yeah, I like The Magician's Nephew. I think it's a fun story. I like the founding of Narnia. I think the founding of Narnia here actually kind of fixes some of the plot holes that are present in the earlier books by actually establishing, you know, Narnia is the name of the planet and this country. And then there's also Arkenland and there are places beyond Narnia. There's a reason why the witch wasn't remembered as the original evil when she first came, like all of that stuff. And I did a little research while I had a second here about the deep magic and the deeper magic. So essentially—
Don't cite the deep magic to me, Alex. I was there when it was written.
The deeper magic was written before the dawn of time. And then the witch came at the dawn of time when only the deep magic was written. So,
Seems like she messed up, eh, Ron? I enjoy this book. My question for you guys is, what kind of investiture is Aslan using in the in Narnia? And is it different than the investiture he would probably use in Charn?
Presumably. But I mean, the witch is weird because she's not Satan. I'm not sure what she is.
Well, which one's Satan then?
Tash.
Yeah, I guess. But then Tash is... Well, not the good guy. He just does Satan-y things to the people who worship him. So, never mind.
Which is different than strict Christian Satan, right? Because strict Christian Satan will suffer for all eternity.
Yeah. He's not super chill. I will say that I like magicians. I like prequels that authors write to go back and try to explain things. I think that probably my favorite part of this whole this particular version of that is the blending of, because we never really get to see beyond the effects of the people who travel to Narnia, the children who go to Narnia. We never really get to see things from Narnia come to real world, and the series of Queen Jadis being in London is perhaps my what really makes it feel, I guess, authentic. Which is silly because it's a fantasy book and yada yada, but.
Thanks so much for joining us. If you enjoy Hero's Journey as much as we love doing it, don't forget to leave us a review wherever you get your podcast from. And don't forget to join our Discord if you want to come hang out, talk about books, which had a lot of people join the other day. Don't know why. As always, I've been your host and judge, Jack.
This is Alex.
And I'm Zach.
And join us next time as we finally finish off Narnia with the epic last battle.
Yay!
Oh, thank you.
I bet they get to like their middle years and they go to a church and they see like an image of God being represented as a lion and they're like, holy shit, it all makes sense. They have an apotheosis.